Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, The Remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 30, 2021. Security forces in Sudan attack jihadist hideout in Khartoum.
Those security threats require a competent, capable, and professional security service to confront them.
And activists in South Sudan say the country needs a new constitution before elections.
The agreement has expired. The air access has expired 36 months since its signature in 2018. And the matrix as well has not been followed. What next?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese authorities say they have arrested 11 suspects from various nationalities who are members of the Islamic State following a raid and gunfire on Tuesday that killed five members of Sudan's General Intelligence Service. Authorities in Khartoum say they are still pursuing four other members of the same cell who escaped. Cameron Hudson is a Sudan expert and former U.S. State Department official. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio on this development.
Sudanese authorities announced late Tuesday that two officers and three non-commissioned officers of Sudan's General Intelligence Service were killed during a raid that targeted a terrorist cell in Khartoum's Jabra neighborhood. A statement on the state-run Sudan news agency says the gunned-down officers were part of a unit tracking ISIS-affiliated terrorist groups in Khartoum. The head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and his deputy, General Mohamed Hamdan Daglo, attended the funeral prayers of the slain officers at the Sudan Armed Forces Mosque in Khartoum late Tuesday. Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok tweeted on his official page offering his deepest condolences to the families of the martyrs who gave their lives defending the stability and people of our country, adding that our people shall never fall prey of terrorism that has plunged other countries into chaos and violence. The head of Sudan's transitional government also called on security and police institutions to, in his words, intensify efforts to prevent any attempt to undermine and destabilize our country, which is opening up and progressing at all levels. Cameron Hudson is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Africa Center, a former chief of staff of the office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan at the State Department, and former director of Africa at the White House.
There are very genuine security threats in the country. And those security threats require a competent, capable, and professional security service to confront them. That much is not in doubt. I think the challenge that Sudan faces today is beyond these legitimate threats. What is the role of the armed forces?
Hudson says Tuesday's incident and last week's failed coup attempt should not be used by Sudan's military to undermine the civilian-led government of Prime Minister Hamdok.
This will likely be used by the military to demonstrate that they need to have a prominent role in running the country. And again, I think that cases like yesterday just further underscore the need for a comprehensive conversation on security sector reform and the role of the military in the country going forward.
Military and civilian officials in Sudan's transitional government traded accusations about what led up to last week's failed coup attempt. Observers say the situation has exposed a fragile military-civilian partnership in Sudan's government. Last year, Prime Minister Hamdok survived an assassination attempt when his motorcade was targeted with explosives while on his way to the office. Hudson says it is not clear if the most recent events are connected to the assassination attempt.
We don't really know how this connects to the assassination attempt last year. My sense is that it is separate, that there are former regime elements, Islamist elements of the former regime, which remain present in the country. I do not think that they are the same as as Islamic State cells. I think that there's been no demonstration that there's overlap between the elements of the former regime and more hardcore terrorist, you know, international terrorist elements. That link has not been established.
Former Sudan President Omar al-Bashir hosted various terrorist groups and leaders, including the head of the Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, prompting the United States government to label Sudan a terrorist state. Sudan was found guilty of supporting Al-Qaeda attacks on U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Kenya in 1998, as well as a bomb attack on the USS Cole off the coast of Yemen in 2000. Under the new transitional government following the Sudanese revolution and Bashir's ouster in 2019, Sudan was removed from the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
South Sudan is expected to hold its first general elections at the end of the transitional period. Some civil society activists say the making of a new permanent constitution and national census are vital for the elections. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
Speaking at a Juba event organized by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan on the roles of civil society organizations in the electoral process, civil society activist Zahara Said, who works for the South Sudan Network for Democracy and Elections, asserted that the peace deal has already expired. Said also questioned how the government expects to organize elections when the National Constitution Amendment Committee has yet to produce a permanent constitution.
The agreement has expired. The AR Axis has expired 36 months since its signature in 2018. And the matrix as well has not been followed. What next? And in Chapter 8 of the agreement, it says that if the constitution is not made on time, there is the supremacy of the agreement. The agreement overlaps everything. How prepared are we for that?
Aside from not having a permanent constitution in place, civil society activists say a national census has yet to be conducted. Two exercises, they say, should be carried out before elections are held. Activists also accuse government officials of restricting their activities. They say during the 2010 elections, civil society activists were free to openly express their opinions, unlike today, when freedom of expression is curtailed. Lon Ruot is a civil society activist who founded the local organization Standard Action Liaison Focus.
When we talk about the issues of civic space, this is crucial because one of the issues that are hindering the space, especially particularly for civil society, you organize a meeting, you have to go to national security and get a letter.
Professor Benigno Akok, chairman of the National Elections Commission, says the timeline to conduct the national census before the election must be met without extensions.
This revitalized agreement mentioned that census must be done to determine the constituencies. The 2008 constituencies were inherited from our old Sudan. Hence, we as a nation, we must make our own census because during the peace agreement, a public, those who went to diaspora, those who are refugees or displaced from where, they ought to be brought back. And then if they are brought back, they ought to be counted. Hence, this cannot be done unless it is amended or the government should have made a follow-up step by step, say that we are not caught up by time. Census must be done.
Akok urges activists to educate the public during the election process.
It is your role, people educated, to make the public aware that why do you like a person? You like a person to come and serve you. If he doesn't promote services in your own constituent, drop him. But who can make them aware? It is you. Because many of us are not educated. They don't know their own right.
Ryang Yere, a member of the National Constitution Amendment Committee, says a new constitution will be drafted and in place by the end of the extended transitional period, which, by his count, wraps up in 2023.
Those are 36 months of the transitional period, excluding the pre-transitional period. And the agreement initially gave us 8 months of pre-transitional period. Then, when 8 months ended, without the forces being graduated. Then there was an extension for 6 months. And then when we also failed to accomplish that task during those 6 months, we extended for another 100 days. In total, we had 1 year, 5 months, and 10 days of pre-transitional period. And transitional period began on the 22nd of February last year. So if you count the 36, you begin from February 22nd of 2020 to February 22nd, 2023.
Based on the assessments of the National Constitution Amendment Committee, it will take 12 months to finish the panel's remaining tasks, according to Yer. He says the parties in the unity government have agreed to extend the committee's mandate. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Still in Juba, some family members of missing persons in South Sudan are appealing to the International Committee of the Red Cross and the South Sudan government to help them start income-generating activities for self-reliance. Some South Sudanese say their loved ones who went missing due to violence, forced disappearance, or natural disasters were the sole breadwinners in their families. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
The ICRC and the South Sudan Red Cross today hosted a community event with families of the missing and former missing persons to give family members an opportunity to share their experiences, offer support for one another, and raise awareness on the challenges they face. 64-year-old Mary Jamba says her son, a soldier, was taken with a group of soldiers by the government from Yei to Malakal when conflict broke out in 2013. She says she used to communicate with her son on the now-defunct Vivacell telephone network, but since Vivacell was shut down, she lost contact with her son. Jamba says last year she was surprised when a team from the ICRC approached her in the market to tell her that her son was looking for her. She says she was connected through a phone call with her son, who was in the Nuba Mountains. Jamba says she has been caring for her son's 3 children and has struggled to provide for the family.
There's no one who works. I have to hustle myself. I sell vegetables. That's how we are surviving. If that was not the case, even 1 pound you would not get, because there is no one working in the office, or even the salary of my son for the government to give us, they don't. I have to hustle.
Jamba is appealing to the government to support her son's children since he was on duty when he went missing.
Let them pay these children in school. And if there is money every month that they can give these children to help them, that will be good. But for myself, I am already old. But now these children, what about their future? All these things are difficult for me. There is no money for school. Especially this year, they are just staying home. They have not been registered because the school fees is now too much.
52-year-old government soldier Gordon Buthumbim says he lost track of his wife and 2 children since 2008 when he was relocated to New Kush, then relocated in 2013 to Juba. Buthumbim says he was shot in December 2013 when South Sudan's conflict erupted and needed several months to recover from his injury. He says he feels bad that he has never heard from his family.
What is hurting me so much is the issue of my children. If my children were around, even my clothes, they would wash. I have some money and I ask him to go get me medicine. He will go because he will know it is his father sending, but there is nothing now. It's only the suffering I am going through.
Buthumbim is urging the ICRC to continue searching for his children, hoping he will one day be reunited with them and can support them. Buthumbim says he continues to receive his monthly salary of 1,300 South Sudanese pounds, but that it is not enough to cover the medical treatment for his broken leg. He is asking the government, the ICRC, or even the United Nations to support people like him with startup capital.
If they can give me money, then I can buy some things, because I know the problems I am going through. What I can do is charcoal business. I can sell things like onions, sugar, coffee, biscuits for children. Maybe from the business I can get myself treatment since I am not getting treatment. I can buy for myself medicine.
Pierre Dobbs, head of delegation of the International Committee of the Red Cross in South Sudan, admits that the vast majority of missing people were the breadwinners for their families. He says it is the primary responsibility of the South Sudan government to take care of the families of the missing.
We can support by providing some technical assistance. We can provide the family news service of the Red Cross at the global level. But we cannot address the needs, the individual needs of each and every family in South Sudan. Occasionally we would do it, but our capacities are limited. So the idea is to have the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs on board with us so that the government can also fulfill its responsibilities.
Kurt Ball, Undersecretary in the Humanitarian Affairs Ministry, says the government recognizes that many citizens have gone missing due to the conflicts or natural disasters like floods, and that their family members are going through tough times. Ball says his ministry is doing all it can to mobilize various institutions to support the families of the missing people.
We do have a package for people who are, for instance, either returned to the country. We have RRC, which is the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, always do provide a small package for the families for them to settle. What do you call family rationing? It composed of, among other things, food as well as non-food items. Apart from that, we also try to bring in more organizations that can help in one way or another. In terms of tracing, we already have ICRC. In terms of relief, we have so many NGOs that are working in this kind of area.
According to the ICRC, there are more than 5,000 missing people in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, why is abduction so common in Jungle Estate? That story is lined up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what steps should the government take to ensure children are enrolled and stay in school?
I think governments should get more facilities in the schools, like library, and also to get them a playing ground. Because as the child learns, they have to play to release stress.
There has to be a conducive learning atmosphere, which of course we lack in most of our government schools.
Government should provide free education for the people in the village, as well as in town also.
Government should provide free meals for kids when they go to school. They should also provide good learning environment. They should also provide qualified teachers who would also take care of the children and keep them engaged so they'll be interested in schooling.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Participants in a dialogue sponsored by the UN agency UNHCR say the slow implementation of a resolution to return civilians abducted from the Greater Pibor administrative area by armed young men from Junglo State and vice versa is hampering efforts to bring an end to conflict in the area. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has the story from Bor.
Speaking at the three-day event that brought together participants from the Greater Pibor administrative area and Junglo State, Malwal Gabriel Kohn, the Jonglei State Peace Minister, says state leaders have identified 27 abductees, most of whom are children in Akobo and Ayut counties. Kohn says the abductees are part of a group of women and children that armed young men from Jonglei abducted from the Greater Pibor administrative area in recent years. Kohn says the process of returning the abductees to the Greater Pibor administrative area began today with a flight sponsored by UNMISS.
the UN flight has just gone to Peri today to go and pick them up. And then also they will go to Ayod, and then they will be transported directly to Pibor. That's what we do. If they are from a far distance, instead of bringing them to the state headquarters, we make sure that the commissioners hands them over to the organizations concerned, and then they can be taken with the lease signed by the commissioner.
Former Jonglei Governor Pili Bagwir says there has been a positive response among communities across the state to calls for peace and the tracing and return of abductees.
You and I committed for peace, and they have accepted to return the abducted children. They have never been benefiting from any abduction or looting. It's a new culture that we don't want to continue with it. So it has to be put that this encroaching culture has to be stopped. Nobody has benefited from it before except those who are core criminal in Pibor administrative area.
Minister Kohn says more than 100 children have been returned to the greater Pibor administrative area in recent months.
They are responding. So we believe that from the 127 that we have so far handed over, we will hand over more than that in the nearest days. According to greater board, they are saying child abduction is not part of their culture. They say the youth did it in revenge of what the people of Greater Pibor administrative area has been doing to them. So they said we don't need to keep anybody's child.
Lokalia Mayor, the chief administrator for the Greater Pibor administrative area, welcomed the efforts by Jonglei authorities to trace abductees and said he is doing the same thing in his area.
I am happy about that, and this is what I have been saying since I came to the office. We want to live in peace among ourselves and our neighbors. I have handed some adopted children and women to Jonglei, and I am doing more to make sure there is peace.
In January this year, the Lawnware and Dinkabor communities of Jonglei State and the Murle community of Greater Pibor Administrative Area held a peace conference in Juba, where all parties agreed to bury their differences and embraced peace. At the end of the conference, leaders from the three communities signed a document stating that all abductees shall be returned and their perpetrators would be punished. It also said compensation shall be paid to the families of those killed or injured during attacks and revenge attacks during cattle raids. Still, cattle raids continued in the area. Late last month, three women were killed during a cattle raid in Jonglei State. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
The International Rescue Committee says more than 2 million Kenyans are facing hunger due to poor rainfall. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta declared a national disaster this month because of drought. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
36-year-old Sulaiman Ahmed Osman lost 50% of his livestock to drought in the past 6 months. He says more are dying now due to worsening drought.
When we lost, you know, this number of animals, and there's no any other source of income, there's no other source of where we can source our daily meals, because we normally used to get milk and the meat, and sometimes selling the animals to get other source of food like the rice or sugar and other things. Now that the animals are very emaciated, nobody can buy them. No milk, because the drought has affected them to an extent that no milk can come from the animal.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, IFRC, says Kenya received insufficient rainfall during the October to December 2020 and March to May 2021 rainy seasons, leading to the current drought situation. The IFRC report said that the arid and semi-arid areas received less than 50% of the average rainfall in June. The three counties in northeastern Kenya received less than 25% of average rainfall. Abdullahi Musa has been buying animal feeds and water for 4 months now for his more than 100 cattle in Garissa along the Kenyan-Somalia border. There are two sets of livestock herders, he says. There are those who the drought in Kenya has affected them. There are those who crossed to Somalia to get pasture, but came back due to lack of water. He says, I'm among the people who are not so affected. I have lost some animals, but most of them are alive. But 90% of animal herders have lost their livestock. They got nothing. The International Rescue Committee says 2.1 million people in Kenya are now food insecure. The head of the organization in Kenya, Mohamed El Mutasari Hussein, says he is concerned about the growing humanitarian situation in some 20 out of 47 counties.
Our concerns overall is the protracted drought situation and the protracted aspect of drought in Kenya that is being over the years coming again and again. And also that concern extended to actually the growing humanitarian needs as people move out of their hometowns, you know, searching for places closer to water sources.
The IRC says climate change is the main driver of the region's recurring drought and locust outbreaks. Kenya's National Drought Management Authority predicts the food insecurity situation will persist until the end of the year. The Drought Management Authority says people's fortunes may change if the affected areas get rain in the next 3 months. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Let us know what you think about issues in our news. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. Send us your brief comments and we will sample some of them on Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with Kini J with the song Corona.
أسمعوا لرسالة قوية من مجموعة مملكة الوحدة والسلامة الترفيهية. كيني جاي, there we go.
كورونا فيروس أي مرض بطال. كورونا فيروس أي عين خطير. كورونا فيروس أي مرض بطال. كورونا فيروس أو بيقتلنا. Valiko wa aizol algasma fi ognede kanita dioshur be aradzede kedeta baliko nefsataki le agrab markasihi jambuita lenas al umon masuma al ayande yahu kini jay biguna itakumbia suma fi radio wa fi aye makan coronavirus se marat batal coronavirus Ayan khati coronavirus de marat batal coronavirus obiaktulnas coronavirus COVID-19 de ayan badafi daula sin Corona, de ayan mindo ilaj. Corona, de ayan gikatulunas bi alokulu.
We have been listening to Kini J and the song Corona. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coronavirus.